Maybe you've read Isaac Fitzgerald's popular Substack newsletter or seen him all upbeat when he gives book recommendations on the Today Show.
This book is a vacation all unto itself. I'm talking cozy motels. I'm talking delicious food. I'm talking the Amalfi Coast.
So you don't immediately think, yep, there's a guy who lived in a Catholic shelter in Boston when his parents became homeless because, as Isaac says, yes, they were married when they had him, but just to other people who threw them out. And yes, they were devoted to the Catholic worker volunteer community, but his dad beat him, his mom leaned on him, often after attempting suicide. You don't see him as a kid who snorted Adderall and created brutal fight clubs when he and his mom moved to hardscrabble Western Massachusetts while his dad had affairs. He spent most of his time alone with friends, a teenage dirtbag Neverland. But even if you do already know some of this, we promise you won't be prepared for the wild ride that is his new memoir, Dirtbag Massachusetts. This author of the best-selling kids' book, How to Be a Pirate, went to work in dingy bars. He smuggled medical supplies for a Christian aid group in Myanmar. He was an actor in the porn industry, but he could write. Isaac Fitzgerald, I'm thinking there cannot be a sequel to this because I don't think you left anything out.
No, you're absolutely right. This is a story that I've been hoping to get down on the page for years, and knowing that this might be my one shot at it, I didn't want to leave anything out.
Even though, we're going to circle back to this, your parents were alive.
Yeah, they've read the book, and they have been so supportive in ways that are incredibly touching.
Well, and they're also back together, which is incredible, because you didn't know that it was probably not good to be living in a homeless shelter after both families. I mean, your parents had to leave two different families, and they had their parents who were also upset about all of this. There you are in a homeless shelter, but it was kind of fun. But your father had affairs. Your mother had to move back home where her mother hated all of this. You were the bomb that exploded everything up. At one point, your mom even tells you that she considered aborting you.
Yeah, and that's a tough thing to hear at any age, but especially when you're 8 years old. And that was very much a story of a woman who was having a very hard time in her life and didn't have boundaries, and also maybe didn't have the support to know that she probably shouldn't in that moment be leaning on an 8-year-old. And you're absolutely right. Some of my happiest memories of my childhood were when we were in Boston, ourselves unhoused while also supporting other people in that community. It was such an incredible experience, and I met so many wonderful people. But yeah, out there in what I call North Central Massachusetts, things were very, very desolate and they were very hard. And so me and my mother had a very, very close but very, very hard relationship for a very long time.
Yeah. This is a hardscrabble town that could be anywhere. But you describe it so beautifully, these old mill towns. There was nothing to do but get effed up or F somebody else up, if I may. I mean, you spent your
days... Robin, you're a pro.
doing drugs, driving around in trucks, drinking beer, listening to music, and you were maybe like 12 or 13. Lots of Chef Boyardee or worse, pasta and butter. And yet, at one point, suddenly you're pole vaulting into a private boarding school because someone saw some promise in you. Talk about that transition.
I had never been on a plane. I hadn't traveled much at all. I'd barely left the state. And all of a sudden, I was at this boarding school with people not just from all over the country, but from all over the world. And I went in with such a chip on my shoulder. And don't get me wrong, like I did. I learned how to act different than myself. A story that's actually not in the book is that I went in there with a very hard Boston accent. Freshman year, I felt like it made me sound ignorant. So I sat in my dorm room and I started to pronounce my R's. I still say I dear. I still have the R's in the wrong spots, but I learned how to pronounce my R's. The next year, I was 14 years old. The very next year, 15, Good Will Hunting comes out. All of a sudden, all the kids are faking a Boston accent. It was ridiculous. I couldn't believe it. But anyhow, I'm just trying to say that I learned how to act of a certain role. But the most important thing that came to me, that I walked in with such a chip on my shoulder, so much pride in my working class background, and I still have that. But through that school, I got to learn that, you know what? Yeah, of course there are jerks who are rich, but some of those students were so kind to me. And then when I would be going home, of course, some of my friends still absolutely wonderful people, and I love them. But there are other people where I was realizing, oh, wait, maybe your closed-minded views aren't what I agree with. And so boarding school really blew open this opportunities for me that I don't think I would have otherwise gotten. And I feel really lucky for that.
It kind of broke my heart, though, when you first get there. You don't have any sheets for the bed. You don't even know how to do that. You don't have a jacket and tie, and you have this lovely roommate. He gives you a jacket and tie. You drape the tie around your neck like a scarf. You don't know what to. It's a real reminder of the gap you know, this mm-hmm. sort of equity gap that we all talk about. You were living it and transitioning. But as you know, you go to college. College seems anticlimactic after boarding mm-hmm. school. You know, then you move on into your 20s. And like a lot of 20-year-olds, you're trying to find your life. And you're gravitating toward bars and motorcycles and the porn industry. You were a participant because it was explained to you by what sounds like a wonderful therapist. You were looking for home and they had to feel kind of dangerous like home did, but you had to find the family in that dangerous spot.
You're absolutely right. And you put it so well, Robin. And shout out to Dr. Jenny Kaufman. She's incredible. She's my therapist. She's like, look, home and church, these spaces that were maybe supposed to be considered and usually are averagely considered very safe, were actually very difficult places for you. So like you said, drawn to edgier areas. But what I found there, which I didn't find in my structured church or in my home life, was community. And the community and bonds and chosen family that I found within these bars in San Francisco really moved me and really made me realize, as long as you find people that are willing to be loving, that are willing to be caring, and are willing to not be so judgmental, because let's be honest, Robin, you and me, New England, not known for not being judgmental, you can really grow into the person that you're supposed to be. And that is where I really found that.
Well, and also all along the way, looking not just for family, but you keep saying it, a reason to stick around, a reason to be alive. Mm-hmm. You had terrible body image, gaining and losing weight. And also, wait a minute, you're so vibrant. You're so full of life. How could it be that you didn't think you belonged here? You sound suicidal. Were you?
Yeah, especially in my younger years. And then I think it's something that I struggled with constantly. I love life. I learned, though, how to put on a mask. And it's all mixed up in probably going to boarding school, figuring out how to, you know, present differently in different aspects of my life. And so I learned how to kind of wear this mask to operate. Yeah. And what I've been able to do through therapy and through talking and through connecting with people who have stories similar to mine. And that's what I hope this book is for other people, seeing other people's stories reflected. I'm sorry, my own story reflected in other people's stories. I've been able to make peace with this and maybe realize I don't need to be wearing this mask and finding that genuine joy in life, because I do feel very lucky to be alive. I feel exuberantly happy, like with most days. Don't get me wrong, there are the dark ones too, but life is such a blessing and it makes me really thrilled that I get to participate and that I didn't mess it up early on.
Well, we touched on it a bit, and then at the end of the book, you do tell us what we've been dying to know as readers. You know, how do your parents feel about this? And your dad has asked you about your book, Are We Going to Be Arrested for Child Abuse? If there wasn't a statute of limitations some of it was really tough. And they miraculously got back together, became sober. I think affairs ended.
Yep.
But how do you forgive? You have a half-sister from one of the parents' marriages, a half-brother from another. Remember, they left families when they had you. How does that happen?
My siblings, one of my brothers, my mother's child, and my sister's my father's child, they're incredibly loving, incredibly talented, incredibly smart individuals, and they're raising beautiful families of their own. And so they at first were a little wary of it, but it turns out my parents are some of the world's best grandparents. Hmm. They might have really fumbled as parents, but they are incredible at showing up for these young children that are in their life now. It's almost like watching them get a second chance. So that's been an incredible thing to watch as this family comes back together. But the other thing is that this book, you know, I'm not going to give away too much here, but the mm-hmm. end, you know, it's important to me that this doesn't read like a perfect, mm-mm, you know, present
no.
that's all wrapped up with a bow on the
no.
top. It's still an ongoing conversation. But what I'm happy about is those conversations are happening. My parents have the book. My mother finished it, and she wrote me an email that just said, I'm so, so sorry. And she went on to say, I didn't know you were carrying this. And now we're having the conversations, you know, that we shouldn't have been having when I was 8, but we maybe could have been having when I'm 30. Yeah. And we're having them now as I approach 40, and I'm so grateful.
Yeah. I want to mention one last thing. Yes, you had the sustenance of the dark bars and the, you know, motorcycles, the porn industry family, mm-hmm. but also as a kid, WAAF, terrific radio station.
Yes, and, shout out to WAAF.
Yes,
sorry,
Hold Steady. Just briefly, what does a band mean to a young boy?
Oh, let me tell you, the Hold Steady is an absolute perfect example When you're young and you're having these moments, you don't know that they're unique. Maybe this is how all of life is. Then you get to a certain age, you realize, wait, maybe this was really screwed up. Then you find the art where you see your own story reflected back on you, and that makes you feel less alone. And for me, that was the music of the Holt Steady.
And he writes about it in Dirtbag, Massachusetts, A Confessional, the highly anticipated memoir from Isaac Fitzgerald. Worth the wait. Isaac, thank you.
Robin, thank you so much for all these wonderful questions.
So Hold Steady's your little hood rat friend.
Well,